Hello, my name is Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMSY Live, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, culturalization, and all that fun stuff global companies need to delight their international customers, or at least not to piss them off too much. On this program, we invite guests who like to have fun and have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So let us know if there's any topics you'd like covered or guests we should reach out to for future episodes. If you haven't already done so, make sure that you are following NIMSY Insights on your platform of choice. We're coming to you on multiple channels today. Most of our folks join us over on LinkedIn. So if you're over there on LinkedIn, howdy, it's good to have you. If you have any questions, comments during the live stream, then make sure to hit that comment button and we can bring your comments up on screen. And we'll take it from there. So without further ado, today we have a repeat offender on the program today, Michelle Hecken. Many of you know and will recognize Michelle from her long experience in specifically the localization world, but just in business in general. So to give us a quick introduction, do you want to transform your business to run without you and scale faster in 2024? Are you tired of feeling like a prisoner in your own business, drowning in tasks and struggling to achieve the ever elusive work-life balance? I think you're reading my diary. Imagine a life where you have the freedom to call the shots, focus on what really matters, and watch your business thrive without you. As a former CEO who guided her translation services company through a high seven-figure exit, Michelle Hecken has a proven track record of creating self-sustaining businesses. Her proprietary system called The Art of Offboarding shifts leaders' paradigms about what their work and life balance can truly embody. Now as an advisor, Michelle enables executives, founders, and presidents to spend 80% of their time focusing exclusively on what they love by offloading and optimizing the rest. With contagious optimism, Michelle imagines a world where every leadership team member wakes up eager to immerse themselves in their true passions while their organizations continue thriving. Today, she's here to share the key to designing operational freedom and fulfillment into your business DNA so you can scale your impact without sacrificing your life. Michelle, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Tucker, wow, I am fantastic. Thanks for having me again. I appreciate it. That was an amazing prologue almost. Thank you for that.
No, thank you, generative AI, who analyzed your LinkedIn profile and wrote that 5 minutes the podcast.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Very good. Well, you've been on the show before. You do a lot, but for those folks who are watching this that maybe haven't heard of you before, maybe haven't watched your previous episodes, tell us a little bit about yourself. I think I covered a little bit in the introduction, but
a little bit.
walk us through your journey. Where'd you come from? What have you done? What are you doing now?
Awesome. Yeah, I'm like, what do I add to that? That was just like, wow. I want a copy of that, please.
I'll send it afterwards.
So for those of you who don't know me, many of you, I'm sure do. I've been in the localization, translation, all of the UNs for over 25 years. I'm not active right now anymore because I had an exit in 2019, as you mentioned. I started Alpha Translations from scratch with a fax machine pre-internet in 1993. For those of you who are old enough to remember what that looks like. And my company was global from day one. We focused mainly on legal translations and worked with probably about 60 of the top 100 law firms. Grew the company, had an amazing team, and I was also a single mom. So at some point, there came a choice of spending time with my kids, being present for them, or just, you know, kind of keep on with the grind, working 15, 20 hour days doing translations. So I decided that my kids were more important, but I also decided that my business was equally important. So I didn't want to have to choose. So that was kind of the birth moment of what I now call offboarding.
It's a topic. It's, you know, my journey has paralleled yours in more ways than one. I haven't gotten to that seven figure exit yet, But, you know,
Yet.
maybe we can talk about that a little bit. Maybe you can give me a little coaching on the air here,
Absolutely,
right?
absolutely.
So, I mean, let's start back. I want to talk about what you're focusing on now with helping others and stuff like that. But let's go back to your time running your company, right? And you said that you had your company, you're a single mother, so you had lots of other competing priorities out there. What was like the first step, like after you realized I need to be able to step back and focus on other stuff? What was kind of the practical first step that you took in order to make that a reality?
That's a great question. The really first, very, very first step that I took was awareness, right? We get so stuck in what we're doing that sometimes we don't realize we have another option. And I had a lot of people tell me, oh, yeah, you can't build an amazing business if you're not in it all the time, doing everything. You've got to start it up. As a single mom, it's never going to succeed. Or as a solopreneur, it's never going to succeed if you don't at least speak 10 languages. I mean, that was in 93, right? People were had a different perspective. So there was one night, I think I shared that story on the last show, where it was like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. I had translated whatever, how many pages, was faxing it back to the client, and I realized that yet another day, I didn't read a story to my kids. Yet another day, I didn't cook a proper dinner. Yet another day, I didn't take any time for me. And I went upstairs and I realized, as I was actually reflecting on this, is that I was getting fired from my own life. My doctor fired me for not showing up, my hairdresser, my friends, and anybody who started a translation company or is a translator. Like, we know sometimes we don't know what clients are going to send in from one day to the next. It's like an emergency room. You don't know. So you're always in reactive mode. And when I had that realization that I was getting fired from my own life, I didn't want my daughters to fire me one day because all I did was work. So the very first step was that wake up moment, that awareness. It's like, okay, no, I have a choice here in my life. I have a choice with my family and I have a choice with my business. And I emphasize that so much because so many of us are, caught up in this. Well, I want this, but I can't. And everybody's telling me that's not possible. And I'm here to tell you it is possible. You just need to know what you want very clearly. So that is always the first step.
Very. I mean, you're speaking my language here, right? Like when you got kids, you got a business, or even you just got a job. It's not even that you have your own business, but you got a very demanding work, and the work-life balance isn't necessarily there. That's a it's really interesting. I've never heard that before. Like getting fired from your own life,
Yeah, that's what
and
was happening.
that awareness is huge, right? I heard something the other day that really kind of spoke to me. It's like there's no such thing as not having time for something. There's no such thing as not being able to afford something. But rather than saying I don't have time for this, I don't have time to read my kids a bedtime story, I don't have time to show up to appointments and whatnot, it's I'm choosing not to prioritize those things.
Yes,
And that's a harsh
exactly.
reality because with
It
that
is.
comes accountability, personal accountability. If I
Yes.
say, well, I didn't have time to read my kids a story tonight, then it's almost like, oh, I'm a victim here too because I just don't have time. Life's hard, blah, blah, blah. But if I say, well, tonight I chose to deprioritize reading my children a story, that hits different.
I love that you're bringing this up. I've read that as well. And the practical application, like you just said, is instead of saying, I don't have time, try replacing I don't have time with, it's not a priority for me too. And when you say that out loud, it really just gets your whole nervous system. Like, I have goosebumps right now, right? If I say, I don't have time to exercise, it's not a priority for me to exercise and take care of my body. Well, what are you really saying? I just that little, and we're in the language industry, words matter. Trying on different words has a different impact on us. And that's very, very true. And so we have a choice. But first, we got to wake up. a lot of us are sleepwalking through life, doop to doop to do to the next thing. Okay, we're gonna do this, and we
Waiting
gotta wake up.
for the next thing, right?
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of folks are just kind of, well, once I have blah blah, fill in the blank. Once I have blah blah, then it's going to be different,
Right.
And whether that's, once I get a job, if you're in school, once I graduate, then once I have a
Yeah.
job, then once I have a promotion, then once I get married, then once I have kids, then once I, get my bonus,
Yeah.
how many out there in the audience can, have ever been waiting around for a bonus to hit,
Yeah,
right?
absolutely.
And what it does, I was just having this conversation the other day, actually, with somebody. And it's, what a lame way to live your life, right? Having
It
this conversation about,
absolutely.
like, sometimes just being real, just being real, just being honest. Sometimes, I just wish that I had that fast forward button so that I could fast forward 2 weeks until that event that I'm waiting for is going to happen.
Right.
But
And somebody who has 2 weeks to live would think you're wishing your life away. You're fast forwarding 2 weeks of your life, right? I just want to throw that in because it's all about putting those things in perspective, right? When I have this, we're not living in the present, right? And if I may, desire does serve us, right? We have this desire. We want to build more, build a bigger company, get more clients, get a bigger bonus, whatever that is, right? So desire is essentially good because it drives us, but desire only serves a purpose until it's fulfilled. So
And then what?
say, and then what? And then that's where the awareness is like, okay, am I going to keep chasing this thing? Or am I going to redefine what I actually really want in my life and not what other people think I should want or what I think I should want based on my beliefs, my upbringing, whatever is there. So that wake up moment is really the most important thing. What do I want? I truly believe we can have everything we want in life. The problem is most people don't know what they want and they don't know how to articulate it. And it's vague, right? It's like, oh, I want to make more money. Okay, what does that even mean? Right? I want to have work-life balance. Well,
What does that mean?
work-life
Yeah.
balance is bullshit, if I may say that on the show,
Thank
because
you.
it's all life. It is, we have one life that we have to live, and part of it we work and part of it we play, but we don't need to balance it out because it's impossible. Balance is stagnant. It doesn't move. As soon as something moves, the other thing has to move. And it just causes a lot of stress and anxiety to always, it's like almost wanting everything to be perfect all the time doesn't work. So let's focus on what we want in our life, in our business, and start from there to design what that's supposed to look like.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I agree with everything you've said. And that awareness, that initial awareness that you said kind of kicked you off on this journey,
Yes.
that's key. And that's the, as you say, desire is a powerful tool. So you had the desire to, a desire for freedom, desire to do what, you want to do in life. And you had the awareness to recognize what that is. But it's like, all right, desire without action is also kind of meaningless. So
Yeah, it is.
what are kind of the first steps
Yeah.
you would recommend towards taking action?
Absolutely. So, well, what I would recommend and what I did back at the time were slightly different because it's more refined and I've kind of, worked with other entrepreneurs. I've written a book about offboarding, so I've refined the process. So back then it was, okay, let me do the math. Actually kind of similar when I think about it, the cadence is the same. So the first thing was, let me do the math. Okay. I know I can translate X amount of words and make X amount of money. What is my vision for the business? How much do I want to make? Well, right there, I mean, I know this is Captain Obvious here, but it's still an important thing. How much time do you want to spend working? How much time do you want to spend with your family, with yourself, traveling, whatever you want to do. So after the awareness, it's that clarity. What do you want? Do you want to work 8 hours a day? Do you want to work 4 days a week? Do you want to have your evenings free? Like really getting clear on what it is that you want and then designing the actions around that, right? It goes back to it, but it's taking stock. I know I can make X if I do the translations myself. Okay. Now, if somebody else does the translations for me. By the way, this is back in like 95, 96,
Sure,
right?
sure, sure.
97. What does that math look like? Okay. How long am I going to be in a bit of a hole when I'm offboarding my translations? Can I train people simultaneously? How much money do I need? We really need to get clarity of the time, the money we need, and what we want our life to look like, and then think about the how. But first, we need to know the what, because if we think about the how, we often don't do the what, because the how is scary.
It is scary. It is scary. And it prevents us from doing the next thing, right?
Yeah.
And this is what I tell people all the time. Focus on the next right thing. Focus on the next step. Don't focus on the end, right? Focus
That's right.
on, all right, what is the very next step? And
so the very next step, once you know what you want, how many hours a week you want to work, write down everything you're doing. Get clear. I mean, I don't think I've ever met an entrepreneur, and I know a lot of entrepreneurs, who has a job description. No entrepreneur
God,
has a job.
I wish I had a job description.
Well, I'll send you my sheet and you can put it in. It's not going to take that long. Why is it important for entrepreneurs and leaders to have a job description? Well, if we're trying to reorganize our time and get clarity on where we want to spend our time, we got to look at it and we got to see what is it. And then the next step we do is we look at, okay, how many hours a week am I spending on this thing, right? So for me, it was mainly translation at the time, but then it was also marketing and sales. So as you have a more robust company, you're flying by the seat of your pants. Like,
yep.
You know what you're doing. Nobody else knows what you're doing.
Yep.
And then you end up in conflict with your team, with your COO or, you know, your number two, because you know what they're doing, but they don't really know what you're doing. And half the times as entrepreneurs, let's be honest, we forget and we make up new things and let's do that. And oh, shiny. And this is fun. And when we keep doing that, it's really impossible to get clarity and say, okay, what's actually on my plate? So inventory, taking stock of what's on your plate, how much time you're spending, what does each of those responsibilities do for your business?
Yeah.
I mean, if
like,
you've
are you
been
getting
in
results?
Business,
what's
are you
the
getting
ROI
results?
Of your activities?
What's the ROI? Which KPIs does it tie to? Right? What line item in your P&L does it tie to? And you'd be shocked how many entrepreneurs are spending time on things that are not revenue generating, but that are actually a cost. That's not the point, right? That's not what we're doing.
Oh, I know. I just approved Renato's travel budget the other day. So I know all about that.
Right. So yeah. And because we do crazy things, because we can, right? And the crazy things are great because they're innovative and they drive growth. But we need to know exactly what our impact is. And lots of times we start doing things in the beginning of the company that we're still doing 5 years later, and we don't even realize that we're doing it. And that could be 5 hours off of your month right there.
Right. Right. And, you know, where do I want to... I mean, I'll say I teach a course. I teach at universities, and I probably have a version online somewhere too. I do a lot of trainings for project managers and account managers,
mm-hmm.
right? Most project managers don't realize they actually are account managers too. At least the good ones should be, right? Serving some sort of account management function. But I always end the course with this lesson on, it's like, how to manage your clients, how to manage your team, how to manage your stakeholders, and then I end with how to manage yourself.
Yes.
Because some of the best project managers I've ever worked with, I mean, myself included, not that I'm the best, but like I include myself in this group, is we're so busy managing money, people, technology, and time mm-hmm. that we forget to manage ourselves. And I've known project managers that can create a beautiful Gantt chart outlining all of the KPIs and milestones, deadlines for a project or for a client or for a program. But then you ask them, what's your 3-year plan for your career? And, you know, it'll be, I want to have better work-life balance. I want to make more money. Okay. How much money? create the work back schedule. I mean, and to put it in PM terms, you got to create the work back schedule. You start with what is your goal, and then you create your milestones, and then you create your work back schedule, and then you can define your own personal KPIs. And if your goal is to make more money, okay, how much more money do you want to make? Let's get specific, right?
Absolutely.
If you want to make that much more money, then maybe you need to get another job. All right. What are your lead and lag measures? And how many resumes did you send out this week? Right. And we forget to manage ourselves.
That is so, so beautiful what you just said. And shout out to all project managers out there. It is a hard, hard job, project management and account management. It is tough, and you guys are all amazing, being able to manage and juggle and deadlines and quality and all of those things. I think it's one of the hardest jobs, definitely for me, way harder than being the CEO or the strategist of the company. So I always have the greatest respect for people doing that. And you're absolutely right, Tucker. And it's true across the board. Like we said, if we don't know what we want, and then we don't make it a priority, right? And why do we not do that? Still in this day and age, sadly, it's often viewed as selfish. Have you ever shared goals with somebody? And it depends on your peer group, right? Spend time on yourself. And if you don't have a peer group where you can say, I want to be making 200,000 or 150, or I'm going to sell for whatever, how many millions of dollars. If you're looking into people's faces that are shocked or rolling their eyes or thinking, oh, whatever, is he on or she on or they on? You need a better peer group. You need to up-level your peer group, because if you can't have the courage to say out loud what you want, you're not going to say it to yourself. You're going to feel like, oh, it's not realistic. And all those old beliefs are going to come up, right? So,
well, and that's it right there. It's not just your peer group, right? You got to convince yourself. You got to change your own beliefs, right? Because I found myself saying that too. It's like, I'd like to make X hundred thousands of dollars, right? And it's like, I don't know, it's this feeling unworthy or something, or what it is, but it's almost like, I would feel embarrassed to say that out loud, because other people are going to look at me and say, like, oh, you think you're worth that much money, right?
Exactly.
And it's like, well,
exactly,
it's my goal.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Right. But then we kind of dim our light, and when we do that, we lose the conviction.
Yep.
And just like a little excursion, because I think this is a really, really interesting topic. I was listening to T. Harv Eker, who wrote the book Secrets of a Millionaire Mind. I follow him. He has some great material. And I was watching a podcast with him, and he explained something that I thought was really profound. So we have this idea, and this umph, and we say, okay, I'm going to do this. And we're excited about it. We're going to go do it. We're going to get this new job. We're going to put all the resumes out. We're going to update our LinkedIn profile, or whatever we're doing, building a new business. Mm-hmm. We're have energy. Okay, great. And then what happens a couple of days later, when you're thinking about how to do it, it's like, oh, that's a lot of work. How do I do that? Well, then we get caught up in all the hows. And what Eker was talking about, which I thought was really interesting, is, of course, our reptile brain, our little mini ego, its job is to protect us. Its job is to keep us safe, to make sure we don't change, because that is always a risk. So we get this, you know, higher consciousness, our awareness, saying we want to do all these things. And then when we get to it, it's like our safety mode kicks in. It's like, oh, are you sure you can do that? Can you do that? And when we talk about managing ourselves and managing the mind, he gave this really, really cool tip. And I want to share it because I think it's awesome. I hope I'm not stepping on anybody's toes here when I say mom or parent or whatever. But, you know, when you have an overprotective parent, and oftentimes that's the mom, my kids are grown. I know I do it to them, where it's like, oh, you know, are you sure that's safe? Be careful, drive safely, do this. Oh, are you sure you want to go travel there alone, right? What do we say to our mom? We say, thanks, mom. I appreciate your concern. Thank you. So if you can say that same thing to that little inner voice, that we know we don't need protection for this, right? It's just that inner voice. Are you sure you can do that? Oh, that's going to be a lot of work. And what if something does happen? What if I lose money? What are all of the stuff that keeps us stuck? If we could just say, oh, thanks. I appreciate you wanting to keep me alive. That's great. There's really no danger. I'm going to move on and do it anyways. I just wanted to share that because I thought it was such a beautiful tool that we can use to overcome that stuckness.
I like that. Very, very practical tip. I'll keep that in mind. I'll keep that in mind.
Right. It's like, okay, mom. Yep.
Well,
and I'm going to do it anyway.
So, I mean, awareness, kind of overcoming things within yourself, evaluating that self-talk and really taking control over that, taking a personal inventory, making a plan, all of that stuff. Now you work nowadays, you work with a lot of executives, senior level people, right? So accomplished people, and they're obviously good at what they're done, respected in their field, that kind of thing. And what I find, particularly for like LSP owners, most LSP owners are, they started out as translators, and then they got a big project and hired a second person, and they got a bigger project and hired a third person, and then before they know it, they're LSP owners, right? And I find one of the biggest struggles for company owners is learning to let go, right? Mm-hmm. Because no one else can do it right. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
No one else is going to care about my company or the way that I like to do things, the way that I'm, the way that I do. And to a certain extent, that's true, right? Ain't no one going to care about your company as much as you do, right?
Agreed.
But how do you overcome that and learn to let go?
Okay. Well, the very first thing that I think is really important is recognizing, why are we hanging on to this? Again, what is everything that's on our plate, right? And what are we afraid of? Where's the fear behind it? Because one of the things I've realized working with high performing leaders and entrepreneurs is sometimes when we want to maintain that control, it's often about the things that we really are not so sure about. So let me give you an example. If I'm the only one who knows how to do something, guess what? I haven't put the time to put a process in. I'm doing it by the seat of my pants every single time. It's second nature. It's easy. I don't think about how does it serve the business. Do I still need to do the same thing I was doing 5 years ago at this different stage of my growth? And more often than not, it's those control things that people hold on to so tightly. And it's only because they don't know how to explain it to somebody else.
Yeah.
There's a saying that goes, if you don't understand it well enough to explain it simply, you don't understand it.
Right.
And it's a huge holdback that masks itself as control, but it really is an insecurity. So going through what everything on your plate is and getting clear, does it energize me? Am I working in my zone of genius? Or is this something that drains me? Do I procrastinate on it? You know, do I delegate without purpose, without strategy? Do I just take things off of my desk? Because it's another pet peeve of mine that a lot of entrepreneurs do. They just delegate randomly and it feels good for the moment. And then their mental load goes even higher later and they're more stressed. So there's a better way to strategically delegate than just kind of being overwhelmed and giving things to other people.
Yeah, because sometimes, I mean, just being real, sometimes you delegate to somebody. And like I was just having this conversation earlier today, I think, with somebody, is that, you know, if you delegate it to some people, and that does not help my stress, because I have a 80, 90% likelihood that it's going to come back on my plate because it's not going to get done properly.
Right, exactly. And that's another big reason why people don't want to give up control, because people think, I'm going to give this to somebody else. They don't do it exactly like you want. And you mentioned in the intro that my dream, the vision that I have, is that everybody in the organization, no matter which organization it is, can work 80% of the time on in their zone of genius. I mean, 100 is unrealistic. There's always stuff that we need to do that we don't absolutely love. But 80% of the time is massive. When I get these offboarding blueprints back from the people I coach, it's more like 60% of the stuff that drains them and only 30 or 40% in their zone of genius, which is really sad. And especially in the localization industry, I mean, if you look at project managers, again, the example, most project managers have the same job description, give or take, right? At least within the company.
There's some
people who love talking to clients. You talked about the importance of also being an account manager as a project manager, right? There's people who love talking to clients.
And then you have people that love spreadsheets.
Correct.
But don't want to get on a phone call.
That's right. We all have that, right? And it's not just in the translation and localization industry. So here's what happens though. 50% of the time, each one of them is not working in their zone of genius. And it's just project management is stressful enough as it is, right? What if they wrote down what they love about their job, what really energizes them, what's their zone of genius, and what are the things that maybe, you know, take more effort? And you look at the team and you could swap things around. It would change lives. It would change bottom line. It would change burnout rate. It would change the amount of projects PMs can put through. And it's just a little tweak. And it all starts with what is on your plate? Why are you doing it? How does it serve the company? And realistically, this is not just for offboarding the owner or the CEO. It is really giving autonomy to the team. Because when we delegate randomly, as you said, it's going to come back to you 80% of the time. And then you're really stressed and there's a deadline. And when you do that, it also leads to micromanagement because you've given it to, they don't have ownership. Right? So, and you then now have given 10 things to 10 different people. You're going to wake up in a sweat in the middle of the night, think, oh my God, where are they with this project? And then you start micromanaging. How's this going? How's this going? Do you need any help? And then you're in more. They don't feel empowered. And the end result is worse versus strategically offboarding an entire responsibility.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. All right. And to me, and I like that you're being realistic with the 80%. I mean, 80% is ambitious, don't get me wrong.
It is.
But 100% is not ambitious. It's unrealistic, right? And like what I tell people, I think a lot of folks kind of got this message from their guidance counselors in high school. And I was of the generation here in America that our guidance counselors would say things like, find what you love and then get a job doing it. You'll never work a day in your life, which is a nice platitude. Right. It's a nice thought to think about. But I think a lot of folks out there have this expectation that I should love my job every day and or all of the time. And that's just not realistic. Even the best job, you're going to have tasks that you hate. Let's say you're a creative person. I like my area of genius, I think, is how you put it. Like, what I like doing is I like doing creative work, like messing around with multimedia, doing video stuff like this. And I know that's what I like because that's what I gravitate towards. If I have 10 things on my plate and one of them's a creative project, I'm going to work on the creative project first, right? Yeah. But it would be unrealistic for me to expect that there's a job out there for me where I just only get to do my creative stuff. Even creative people need to fill out expense reports at the end of the month, right? They need to fill out timesheets. So the 80%, I think, is pretty good. It's pretty ambitious.
I mean, if we start at 30 or 40, and even if we get to 60, that's a massive improvement. And I totally agree with you. I'm also an artist, so I paint, and I love big oil paintings, right? And it's creative, and I'm in my zone of genius, and I really, really like it. Okay, guess what? I still have to wash out the brushes later.
Right.
I still have to put everything away. Yeah. And I mean, creative is like, okay, but I still have to do that. Otherwise, next time I'm not going to be able to create. So it's never 100%.
Exactly. Well, I mean, so much of what we're talking about here is self-awareness. And you mentioned you have your folks fill out forms. This is a good time. Talk to us a little bit more about what you actually do. And I can even bring up your website here. This is, was it michelleheckin.com?
MichelleHeckin.com, and Michelle with one L, like my name on the screen.
So michelleheckin.com, you help people achieve what you've achieved. Essentially.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about
Yes.
that.
Yes, absolutely. When I sold my business, I started writing a book and trying to figure out, okay, what are the lessons? What do I want to share with the world? How can I serve other people, other entrepreneurs? And so I started writing the book, and it's called The Art of Offboarding. And it was kind of funny because my coach was like, "You can't call it offboarding. That's like firing. That's so negative. Don't call it that." I'm like, "It's perfect because you need to fire yourself from the things that are not serving you, not
Love it.
serving the company, not serving anybody else in your life." So I was okay with that. So The Art of Offboarding was born. Since then, over the past 5 years, I've been coaching high performing entrepreneurs and leaders in all industries. And so I've now developed a system which it just works. I make it really simple. I'm a big fan of simple. I'm an artist. I like simple. I'm not a big spreadsheet, do all these things. That doesn't light me up. But what lights me up is giving people very simple, easy to follow systems that are not complicated, because then you get where you want to go. So I had people asking, obviously, there's only so much time I have to coach one-on-one, because of course I know what I want in my life as well and what I want it to look like.
Right.
Otherwise, obviously, you shouldn't be listening to me if I'm not living what I'm talking about. And so then I said, okay, I'm going to put this together, not just in a book, but into a course, which I think we just had a press release go out as well, today or yesterday or today. So I'm launching an online course called The Art of Offboarding Mastery, where I walk participants through eight very simple but very profound modules. And yes, it starts with awareness. Yes, it starts with understanding what you love and what you don't love and what you want, and getting really clear on how many hours a week you want to work. I share all of the tools that my one-on-one clients use. I share the exact system that I used. I share things that work, things that didn't work. So it's an online course that can be completed in 8 weeks, but does not need to be completed in 8 weeks. And then it's supplemented by a 90-minute live coaching session with me every single week, because I want people to be successful. I don't want to say, here's this course, good luck with that, because it is in depth and the mindset is important, and being able to understand how things go together in a simple way is important. So I do a live coaching session every week with the participants of the course.
Nice. And this is just launching. This is new, right?
It's brand new.
So for
It's
folks that have been
brand new.
following you for a while, you haven't seen this yet. So
Yeah.
michelleheckin.com, you can go find out more information about it. And
Yeah.
I love this. I mean, what I'll just say is, you're not to, fluff people's egos too much when they come on the show, but you're the real deal, right? You grew your business, you exited your business, made some good money from that. You're not selling courses online to pay the rent, right?
No, I'm not.
You're doing it because you have an honest desire to reach out and help people like achieve what you've achieved.
Yeah,
So I think
because
that's
I
really
have the
cool.
system and I've done it, and I love sharing it with others. Like, I don't know, I think we all have some kind of purpose here. And while I'm not crazy religious or anything like that, definitely more spiritual, talk about awareness and mindset and all those things. There was a quote from Mother Teresa. It goes something like this: "Let nobody come to you ever without feeling better after." And that's kind of been my mantra. It's like, if I can smile at somebody maybe they'll smile at somebody else and somebody's going to have a good day. Or if they're coming to me and I'm interacting in some way. And I think that's just kind of the essence of me. I don't want to sound like, ooh, it's an angel. No, no, no. There's definitely the bitch in there too. But if I'm aware and if I'm mindful, that is my preference, right? To spread positivity and happiness, but also to help people live their lives in a way that suits them. And get to the money and get to the the desired outcome that they want.
Well, I mean, because money, I mean, it's all well and good to talk about, you know, these feel-good concepts of, you know, freeing up your time, empowerment, and all of this stuff. But a lot of that's enabled by money. Money is the thing. But to me, especially the older I get, is like money is not a goal. Money is a tool to be used.
Yes. Thank you for saying that. I 100% agree. And money also is not evil, right? A lot of us have these beliefs running in the back of our head. Like we've heard things like money doesn't grow on trees and rich people are bad and rich people are this and you know, they exploit everybody else and money is bad. And if we can let go of, you know, well, it wouldn't be the first belief I would let go of, but it is an important belief to let go of because you're right, Tucker. Money is a tool, but a tool for what?
Exactly.
To live our lives the way we want, to help
and to help others.
People.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
But we can't help others if we don't care of ourselves first.
No, you got to take care of, because otherwise you don't have any power to help others, right? Helping others requires resources. And, you know, I can't pour into you if my cup is not full itself, right? And,
you know, I have an analogy that takes that one step further. I used to always use that, you know, fill your cup first.
Yep.
And then others. I didn't make this up. I read this somewhere, and I'm sorry, I don't know whose words it are. But the analogy is, if you have a teacup, you fill the cup full until it overflows into the saucer, and you give from the saucer so that your cup always stays full. Because if you're pouring from your cup, guess what? Now it's half empty, and you got to replenish it. But if you can keep your cup always full with so much overflow that you can give from that overflow, then you don't have that lag. Then you don't have that, oh, now I'm exhausted. Now I've given too much.
Yeah.
Because most of us are givers. Most of us are people pleasers.
Yeah.
Right? We want, sorry, a second.
We can hear half of you.
Yeah, right. I know.
Right? Now we're plugged
back
in.
It's only half of my brain that's coming through then, so we don't want that. So I like that analogy to make sure that our cup is always overflowing, because it keeps ours full all the time, and then we can help more people.
Which means, right, that, you know, sometimes you're the teacup, sometimes you're the kettle, and sometimes you need to ask for help from other people too, right? I think that's another message that can often be misconstrued or misinterpreted, especially, you know, in 2024. Is that we need to be strong and independent, and I'm not even going to get into like the different messages that women are getting in the workforce versus men and all of that stuff. That's a different podcast. But there's very much this message of, you know, you need to be self-sufficient and strong and stoic, you know, and, you know, self-made person. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes that gets misinterpreted into as like, I don't need no help, right? Like, it's weakness to ask for help. And so many, I'm a company founder, owner, whatever you want to call me, right? And I'll tell you, I don't have to tell you, I'll tell you, the audience, it's lonely at the top, right? And it's a cliche, you've heard that before. Let me tell you from experience, it's lonely at the top. Like when I'm a project manager and I've got like five reporting lines between me and the CEO, I've got all sorts of friends I'm going out to happy hour with after work, and we're bitching about the bosses, and you know what I'm saying? But when you're at the top, you don't have that camaraderie and you feel on your own. I'm blessed because I have a business partner. I'm not a founder, I'm a co-founder. So I can call him and yell at him and bitch and moan and whine and complain. I actually just tried calling him before this podcast. He's smart. He didn't pick up. But a lot of people don't have that, Right. And I think that's why building those professional connections, network, this is why I think networking events are so important in our industry, in other industries. I say our industry, localization. I know you're beyond, you've graduated localization industry, but that's where your heart is. I know. It's so important to have those things. And I think that's where coaching comes in as well. Right. Just having that sounding board.
Tucker, you're so right. And when I sold my company and kind of started doing these things on my own, not only did I not have a team, right? So at the beginning, I was kind of doing the opposite. I was onboarding, I was building, right? Mm-hmm. It was just me again. But of course, obviously, I'm doing it with offboarding in mind. And now I do have a team again, and things are looking very different. But it is so lonely sometimes, because you can't even run ideas by anybody, right? It's just everything's in your head all of the time.
Yeah.
And you don't have an outlet for it, and you don't have a sounding board, right? I mean, I have two coaches. I'm an executive coach. I have two coaches. And I always say, never hire a coach who doesn't have a coach themselves.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Ever.
I was just right? going to say that.
You don't have a coach, then I don't think you're worth your salt. I know that's a little bold to say, but if we're not doing the work on ourselves, if we're not always learning, if we're not always growing, how do we help our clients grow, right? Yep. It's an evolving process, and absolutely having a peer network. I'm also part of a network called Entrepreneurs Organization. Tiny little plug here, but it's basically other entrepreneurs. So you can have somebody to talk to, right? The networking events in the industry, I mean, countless ones that I went to. The last one I went to was actually in Warsaw, where Renato and I talked about him helping me exit my business and find a buyer for it. But like, just the camaraderie, so many great friends over the years. And when you say something, it's also industry specific. People understand you.
Yeah.
They can challenge you. It's so important. And having information too. I mean, what you guys are doing at NIMSY is so important to support those choices as well. Because if we have to figure out all this information on our own and strategy on our own, and then, you know, It's really hard. So yeah, it's
a big part of what we do here at NIMSY is just help people, like benchmarking is a term that comes to mind, you know, helping people benchmark their localization programs. But a lot of the requests that we get from our clients or the questions that they ask us are kind of along the lines of, well, how do these other companies do it? And how do we match up, right? And because they don't know, because you're in a vacuum.
Exactly.
So, you know, big brands, global brands that you've heard of, that you're customers of, out there will come to us and say, well, here's what we're doing with our localization program. Here's the technology. Here, blah, blah, blah. Like, how are we doing? Like, are we missing out? You know, they're having this doubt, like, oh, are we missing anything? Do we need anything? And like, yeah, a lot of times it's like, yeah, okay, let's work on this a little bit. But sometimes it's like, you guys are actually doing pretty good, right? And just having that validation, right? So they can sleep easy at night, because they're going to sleep thinking, oh my gosh, we're not cutting edge enough. We're not leveraging the latest technology. We're falling behind on industry trends. But just having a third party who talks the talk come in and say, actually, you're doing pretty good. That adds a lot of value in and of itself.
That is so valuable, Tucker. And I can totally so agree with that. Because when I was building the business, it's like, okay, I think this is going to work, and I would learn. And I think one of the things that's really important for success is to keep learning and growing, but implement. Like, you can't just learn and learn and learn and not do anything, right? Learn, implement. And that's what I was doing. And still, I still had that feeling. It's like, okay, these other companies, like, you read their marketing, you read everything that they're doing. And it's that little child syndrome where we think other people are doing it better. Yeah,
exactly. Like,
they're doing it better. And when I went through the process of selling
my company, you're judging your reality on other people's marketing material.
Exactly.
Marketing material does not necessarily reflect reality, right?
No. And it's not just marketing material, it's also perception, right? If it's a big company, they must be able to do this better than me, right?
Yeah.
So all of
I
those
used to
things
think
that
that.
are
I've worked with enough big companies now to realize
not true.
Not true.
It's not true. If anything, big companies are trying to be more like small companies so they can be more nimble and act faster. But at the same time, it really is this realization. When I sold and I went through due diligence the first time and then after that, coaching other entrepreneurs where I just, you must have this, you must have this, you must have this. And they're like, no, we don't have that. And sometimes it's like, how are you running a business without those things?
Yeah.
So I learned afterwards that what I was doing was actually way better than what I thought I was doing. And those networks and that benchmarking that you mentioned is so important, because here it can save us money. If we're constantly thinking what I'm doing is not good enough, first of all, we're not focused. We're chasing the next best thing. We're always in lack. We might invest in software, in programs, in whatever that we don't need. If we could just benchmark and know, okay, we only need these tiny little tweaks. But
yeah.
If we're always alone and not help having coaches or research or consultancies or peers
yeah.
that you can have an open conversation with, it's pretty hard to realistically see how great you actually are already in the company.
And like you said, it can actually tangibly save money. I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with somebody says, oh, well, like Acme technology company over here,
yeah.
I listened to their presentation at LocWorld and they've got this proprietary tool that does X, Y, and Z, and I need to invest millions of dollars in order to do that. And it's like, all right, well, first of all, Acme Technology Company, it doesn't do all of that stuff they say it does.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, no, you don't, because here's some other, you know, like a quick 30-minute
all
conversation can save people millions of dollars. But you can't have those if you're not connected, if you don't have a coach, if you don't have a network, if you don't have a support group.
I agree. And that's why I'm so happy that even though I've exited the localization industry, that I get to be part of it again.
Yep.
From a business perspective. And so I'm really excited to talk to people and answer questions and just, especially in this time right now. I mean, you know, when I sold 5 years ago, people were like, why are you selling now? You know, you're doing so well and it's so profitable and you have such a great company. Like, why you're working 4 to 10 hours a week. Like, why would you sell that? Like, you're crazy. This is why.
Yep.
Right. This is why. And having said that, for me, after 25 years of running the business and growing it and scaling it, I knew that I didn't have the energy or the interest
yep.
in really pursuing that technology. So what I'm saying is I don't believe there's no opportunities. I sold because I didn't want to take that next stage.
Yep.
For me, I think there's many, many opportunities for the localization industry. Maybe even more than we can see right now.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. I think there are. There always
yeah,
are. But
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it all goes back to how we started this conversation with is self-awareness, right? Realizing,
yeah.
You know, this, I've done what I can do and it's time for my next chapter. Time to move on. So I'll use that as a segue to say, anyone out there listening, if you are having a moment of self-awareness, self-realization, and would like to talk to Michelle Moore, michellehecken.com, Michelle with one L. What, any other ways to get in contact with you, Michelle?
You could also email me again, michelle@michellehecken.com, Michelle with one L, and or just shoot me a message through the website or reach out to me personally.
Very good. Well, Michelle, thank you for becoming a second timer on the show here. We'll see about third and fourth time here.
I appreciate it, Tucker. Thank you so much for having me. And by the way, if we're ever in the same place, I would love to go off on different tangents talking to you about some
I could
of
talk
the
to
topics
you.
That we just started with.
I
right?
could talk to you for a few hours. It would be better
too.
With beer and the ability to use more intense swear words because we're not live
it.
Streaming. So that would be my requirement for such a conversation.
Next time at some conference, we'll meet and we'll catch up and have that longer, more fun and more profane conversation.
Thank you. You're reading my mind. All right. Awesome. I will take us out here. Thank you, Michelle. Ladies, gentlemen, if you enjoyed this episode of NIMSY Live, join us next time on Monday when I'm talking to the folks from Vamos Juntos. It's a really cool conference. We're talking about networking. We're talking about building your network. It's a really cool conference down in South America. NIMSY's going to be there. Multilingual Magazine's going to be there. So come hear more about it on Monday when I talk to those guys. I appreciate our guest today, Michelle. I appreciate all of my colleagues here at NIMSY Insights, and I appreciate you, the audience, joining us live today. If you have any questions, comments for Michelle, you know where to find her. If you have any questions, comments for us, you know where to find us, info@nimsy.com. And I look forward to next time. Cheers.